Was the father of our country, George Washington, a Christian? And if so, why does it matter? I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point, and we welcome back to the program Dr. Peter Lilback. And he and I had the privilege to write a book several years ago called George Washington's Sacred Fire, and now it has been abridged. And the book was really thick, and it made a point that George Washington was indeed an 18th century Anglican and all that that entails. And so without further ado, let's welcome back to the program Dr. Peter Lilback. Peter, it is always a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you.
Well, Dr. Newcomb, it's always an honor to be with you and your guests. And Jerry, it's a pleasure to call you a friend and a co-writer with me. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. Okay, so you founded Providence Forum. You're the founding president. I'm privileged to be the executive director. It is now a part of Coral Ridge Ministries, thanks to you donating it. But the issue of George Washington and his faith, I understand that about 35 or so years ago, when you first set out to study more about America's Christian roots, you were beginning to think, wow, the scholars seem to say the founding fathers, including George Washington, were basically deists. Well, first of all, what does a deist mean? And then what did your research lead you to?
Okay, well, basically, we have two words in philosophy and theology that are close, but they mean something very different. Theism, T-H-E-I-S-M, and deism, D-E-I-S-M, are both from words that mean God, but theism is the idea that there is a personal God, a God who reveals himself, who has allowed us to know he exists and has given us his word. Maybe has even visited us. But deism says, well, there must be a first cause of everything. That first cause has made the world, but he's utterly uninvolved with anything in this world. So he's a distant, a first starter of the universe, we can sometimes say an absentee landlord, a blind watchmaker that just wound up the clock and lets it go and is uninvolved. So deism is really a place that just says there's a start for everything. There must be somebody out there, but we don't know him, and he has no engagement with us. Very different from a theist, which is a subset of theism, is obviously Christianity. We believe God has spoken. In fact, God has visited us in the incarnation of Jesus Christ.
Okay, and so you, years ago, you were a young pastor at Oxford, Pennsylvania, so kind of a small congregation, I guess, and you saw a letter you wrote a letter to the editors of the local paper. Tell us what happened and the reaction, and then how that was the germ of the idea that became George Washington's Sacred Fire, both the old and the new version.
Yeah, so basically, it's hard to believe this, but in 1983, when I was just starting my first pastoral charge, it was the year of the Bible. Ronald Reagan was president, and the Republicans and Democrats agreed that we should encourage people to be aware of the Bible's impact on America. I hope that day comes again. So we decided that we would advertise that fact in the local weekly newspaper, and that we would say something like this. Here's a quote from a president about the Bible. We had found collections of those. We said, this year's the year of the Bible in America. And then at the bottom, it said, every year is the year of the Bible at Bethany Presbyterian Church in Oxford, Pennsylvania. Well, while we were doing that, one of our elders was in the Gideons, and they were helping to make Bible storybooks available to school kids. You're the Bible? You want to know what it is? We'll make it available for free. Well, the ACLU came to town and said, you can't do that. That's the establishment of religion. They said, we're going to sue the school unless you stop doing it. Well, our elder came to a meeting at the church, and he was very upset. I said, what's wrong? And he told me that story. And I was astounded. I said, this is the year of the Bible. How could someone be sued for doing what the year of the Bible is all about, telling people what the Bible is, not evangelizing, just saying this is what the Bible is? So I wrote a letter to the local newspaper that we were advertising in. I made my case. I thought our founders were faith-friendly. I remember the McGuffey Reader started off with teaching kids to read the Bible, one of their first school texts used in school. The New England Primer was based on the Bible. I knew a little bit, but you know what? I had to be honest. I was not an American historian. I was a Reformation historian. So I wrote my letter. I was proud that I'd done my part. I stuck my head out of the foxhole, but I got shot at. because the next week the ACLU literally critiqued my letter to the editor. They said, the man who wrote last week doesn't understand the First Amendment, doesn't appreciate Jefferson and Madison, their insights. And so I was embarrassed. I thought, what have I done? Have I been wrong about my history? That's not my field of studies, but I thought I knew enough. So I did what scholars are supposed to do, go back and do some more study and reading. So I went to the local Lincoln University library, and I found a book in the section on the founding called George Washington and Religion by Paul Bowler. Okay, I better start here. Paul Bowler, presidential historian, a prize-winning book, professor at Southern Methodist University. I said, well, he must know his stuff. So I started reading. I was only a few pages in, and he said, well, Washington, like all of our founders, was a deist. And I said, oh, man, I am really off base here. I guess I got to read this book and find out how I was so mistaken to think our founders were faith-friendly. And so I started reading, and halfway through, I discovered that quote after quote that was being given from Washington's view was laced with the Bible. And I realized the man who was writing had never read the Bible, so he couldn't see the Bible in the quotes that he was using from Washington. And that's my epiphany. I said, I've got to answer this book. I've got to show to people that there's a lot more Bible and Christian faith in this man than is being allowed to be told by our scholars. So that started a 20-year pilgrimage of just, I like to say, instead of playing golf, which I'm really lousy at, I did research on Washington. That was my golf game. And so years went by, and I was just having fun collecting all of my notes and from time to time doing archival work and reading Washington's works. And then I met this fellow named Jerry Newcomb. Hey, Jerry, how you doing? Jerry.
Very well.
Said, wow, I've heard that you're working on this Washington project from one of your pastoral staff members. And I said, yeah. And you told Dr. Kennedy, and the amazing thing, you reported back and said, Dr. Kennedy said, if you can get that book done this year, I will publish 19,000 copies and share it with all of my ministry worldwide. Well, you know what? No young author ever has an opportunity like that. And so, lo and behold, I went to work squeezing in every minute I could to get it done, including not sleeping very much for the year. And we got it done. And Jerry, you were integral in putting it all together. And out it went. 19,000 copies went out, and it was a wonderful blessing. So with the abridged version, which you also helped to abridge, instead of a 1,200-page book, it's down to about 450 pages, I think. And it is dedicated at the beginning to the legacy of Dr. Kennedy, who inspired me even before I started writing on Washington to think about Christians impacting America. So I owe a lot to Dr. Kennedy and Coral Ridge Ministry. So that's part of the story.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. At the very opening of the program, I asked, was Washington a Christian? And the second question I asked is, why does it matter? So I'd like you to ruminate on that.
Yep. Well, as you think about a person's testimony of Christianity, where would you go first to find out? Well, you'd go to their own words. That's exactly what scholars haven't done when it comes to Washington's faith. They've just simply declared that he's a deist, that he had no interest. So I spent the time to say, well, what did Washington say about his faith? And again, he will declare that he was a Christian. He was a warden and a vestryman of his church. He purchased the communion wine for the church. He bought a pew that was closest to the communion table. He helped buy the organ and was angry when they didn't spend the money properly for the organ he wanted for his church. His pastor that he went to worship with is known as one of the most evangelical men of his day. Washington, in a letter, wrote, what I've written to you is true on the faith of a Christian. When he was at Valley Forge, when everything was lost, he calls to his men and he says, while you're pursuing the great glory of being a Christian, a patriot, add to it the highest glory of becoming a Christian. So he saw being a Christian as even more important than being a patriot. When he spoke to his army, he said, I want you to be Christian soldiers. A minister from the Lutheran tradition heard about Washington when he went to see his son, who is now a general. That was General Muhlenberg. That was a minister himself, a Lutheran father, minister to a Lutheran son, minister who is now in the army. And the report back was that Washington is not a man of the world. He's a man who loves his Redeemer. And as he follows the Christian faith, calling on his men to live Christian lives. And he said he's not somebody that is out there in the world. And that's why God has so spared him in so many dangerous times. So there's that testimony. Another great testimony would be to a minister. He writes, "No one has a more firm reliance on the all-wise God than me." In other words, he's saying, I have a greater faith than anybody I know. He was saying, if I'm going to lead this army with such little resources, you got to believe I'm trusting in God to help me to accomplish it. He calls himself a preacher of providence when he sees the mighty works of God blessing the American cause. And of course, wouldn't you know if you're looking for a testimony of someone's Christian faith, it wouldn't only be their words, but you might ask their family. And guess what? His granddaughter, who lived with him for much of her early life, has asked the question, was your illustrious grandfather a Christian? And after going through all the evidence that she saw of his faith and life, she said, you may as well doubt his patriotism as to doubt his Christianity. Now think about that. Someone living in his home who knows him better than anybody because she was there day after day watching him in those quiet moments, said, if you don't think he's a Christian, then don't call him a patriot, because there's evidence just as strong for both of them. So Washington, all throughout his life, was a man. Now, why does it matter? Because where you start determines where you end. If we started with the deist Washington, it's very easy to say, well, God doesn't matter. He's hardly important at the beginning, so why not be a secular nation? But how important it is to think about this. If we have a founding father who called on us to follow the example of Jesus Christ, and he did, as the general, said we'll never be a happy nation without it. How hard it is to move from a Christian Washington to a deist or secular or atheistic nation. It's a denial of our founding leadership. And that's why we want to recover Christian faith of Washington, because it helps us to start at the founding place where God is central. And no wonder that we still have as our motto, "In God We Trust." That was Washington's motto, was God and country. So we need to reclaim Washington, because it gives us the foundation for a God-centered nation today.
And here we are at America 250, so that's such great timing. We have a minute left. How about some who might object to Washington the Christian because he used all these different fancy words for God, even the word providence? So 1 minute, sir.
Okay, well, basically what we need to realize is that Washington uses over 90 different phrases for God. We've counted them out. And the reason that's amazing is that he's living in an era we sometimes call the Baroque era, with all the beautiful ornamentation and ideas and art and music. And so it's like, I don't want to refer to God just as God again and again. So he will use multiple phrases, which we find in the great preachers of the day. They did the same thing. Washington is reflecting how preaching was done. And when you look at a deist like Thomas Paine, his vocabulary for God, it's meager. He might have three or four words he'll use for God as he rejects the existence of God. So the bottom line is, what we find in Washington reflects the preachers of his day, and the multiple terminology that he used as a way of bringing glory to God. And of course, that's what Christians are called to do, to worship God. The chief end of man is to glorify God. And one of the ways we do that is by capturing his multiple names and attributes of Scripture and his role in life, so that he might be elevated above the normal thing. And Washington did that.
All right, Dr. Lilbeck, we are out of time. Again, the name of the book is George Washington's Sacred Fire. This is the abridged version. Website for information on the book is prpbooks.com. Thank you, Peter, and happy birthday to America.
Same to you, Jerry. Thanks for your great work in leading us in our patriotic quest to love our God and love our country.
All right. God bless you now. Bye-bye.